Hey there, welcome to episode 379 of the Fantastic Forecast. I'm David Elliott, and if I'm going to spend $4.99 a month on a Batman comic, it better come with a special offer for Alfred to come over to my house once a month and jack me off. Today, Fantastic Four, 379 from August 1993. Only Death Be My Salvation by Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan. So last issue, Mr. Fantastic got stabbed through the chest with an axe, although it was a psionic Sith belonging to Huntara, which seemed like a pretty shitty weapon because at the start of the issue, Reed is back at FF headquarters, hard at work in his lab, even though his doctors told him to get some rest. Also last issue, Sharon Ventura was transferred back into a she-thing, albeit a very mutant, deformed, grotesque version of a she-thing. She's strapped up to a table, and Ben assures her that Reed will help figure out what's wrong with her, even though she points out that Reed couldn't do shit last time she was a she-thing, not to mention Reed's never been able to help Ben from being a thing. So Reed's been working hard, too hard, and he finally passes out from exhaustion, and Sue comes over and helps him off to bed. Lijah the Skrull thinks to herself, poor Susan. Not only does she have to deal with Reed being injured, there's her adult son Franklin, who's come from the future. Sue was also injured last issue, and she's been afraid to use her force field powers ever since. Sharon is like, fuck this, and she rips off her straps, and she starts destroying the equipment, and Ben runs over and tries to calm her down. She says that Doom is the only one who can cure her, but he's the asshole who turned her into this creature in the first place. But Ben assures her they'll find a way to save her. Sharon hangs down her head and tells Ben to don't look at her. She's grotesque. She couldn't win his affections even when she was attractive. And now, she thinks he definitely doesn't want her. I wouldn't be so sure about that. If there's one thing we learned about Ben over the last 379 issues, he probably likes her more now that she looks less like a woman. Ben leads Sharon out of the room, and Johnny tells Franklin that Doom is going to pay for what he's done. Franklin replies, trust me, he will. And considering Franklin's from the future, he's not just being optimistic. Meanwhile, speaking of Dr. Doom, he's having a big feast back at his castle in Latveria. He's dining alone, as always. They bring out a tray full of desserts, cupcakes, ice cream, cake. I'd like to see Dr. Doom eat a piece of cake with that metal mask on. But he says he's not interested in dessert. I guess when your outfit is a suit of metal armor, you really gotta watch your figure. You gain a few pounds extra, and that shit gets really uncomfortable really fast. Doom seems concerned about a mysterious virus that's killing mutants. Something from the pages of the X-Men, I suppose. The Legacy virus, right? Is that something like that? They've been running tests and trying to come up with a cure before it affects his country. So Dr. Doom is worried about the mutants in his country? I find that hard to believe. A robot comes in and says, Master, I have just been informed that Project Space Probe has made initial contact. Ooh, Project Space Probe. I wonder what that can be about. Probably some kind of probe in space. Doom gets up to go check on things over at the space laboratory. Doom has stolen and stored up some cosmic power from Aaron the Evil Watcher, and the space probes are designed to find more cosmic beings with power he can make a grab for. He gets into the lab and asks his assistant how things are going, and the assistant replies that they've detected an unidentified alien life form of remarkably complex energies, and he's taken measures to lure that powerful being to Earth, which sounds like a terrible idea. So back at FF headquarters, Johnny is playing pool with adult Franklin, and Lijah the Skrull is watching, and she seems jealous. He seems to have time for everyone except for me, she thinks to herself. I don't understand Johnny. He has a wife who can make herself look like any kind of woman that Johnny might possibly want her to look like. A redhead with short hair, a redhead with long hair, a redhead with medium hair, any kind of woman Johnny wants. And he's usually so horny. How come he's not horny? Did he get wore out in jail? So Johnny and Franklin are chatting about how Franklin was taken to the future, he grew up, he came back, and then Franklin is curious about that warrior woman the FF were fighting last issue. And Johnny's about to say something when he gets a splitting headache. Turns out, Franklin just ripped the image out of his head. What a little dick. And he recognizes who Huntara is. I'm glad somebody does. Ben runs into the room, yelling that he tried to find Sharon, but she's gone. Well, that's the best news I've heard all issue. Does that mean they're going to have to go look for her? Ugh, I hope not. Meanwhile, up in orbit over Earth, on Paybox's ship. You know, I have to admit, there's one thing I like about the DeFalco issues. There sure are a lot of plots and subplots going on all at once. Even if you get bored with one story, like with the She thing, for example, there's 10 other stories going on at the same time to keep your interest. So up on Paybox's ship, he's there with Devos, Claw, and Huntara. Claw seems impressed by Paybox's ship, or at least he says he is. He's actually thinking to himself that it's like a child's toy compared to Galactus' ship. Devos is over there complimenting Huntara on her fighting skills. Oh, he totally wants to get it on with her. I can tell. She says all her people are mighty and brave, like her. All the people of Elsewhen. Well, they may be mighty and brave, but when it comes to naming things, they all have the skills of a Gwyneth Paltrow. Elsewhen. What a terrible name. So Paybok tells everyone to listen up and gather around. He has a plan. A plan for the total destruction of every human being on Earth. Later, Johnny's flying around the city. We learn that he's been released on bail. But below on the street, people are freaking out, like he might set fire to the city the way he set fire to ESU. Johnny comes across one person who's glad to see him. It's Bridget O'Neill. He asks her, "How's it going, pretty lady?" And she's thinking to herself, "Pretty lady? She's totally getting wet for him. Well, maybe. That's why he's not banging his wife. He was saving up his spunk for Bridget O'Neill. She says it's kind of a shame to see all these people reacting to Johnny this way after all the times he saved the city. Well, actually, Reed has saved the city many times. Johnny spent most of his time unconscious. Johnny says it might be better if he was just ignored. So they chit-chat for like a couple of minutes, and then Johnny says he's gotta go. He flames on and he flies away. Wait a minute. Was this a date? An arranged meeting? Or did Johnny just randomly stumble upon Bridget in a huge city with millions of people? Doesn't make any sense. After he's gone, we learn it's not even Bridget. It's Lijah the Skrull, posing as Bridget. And she is pissed, thinking that her husband is a two-timing snake. But then again, are they still married? Or was that annulled on account of the fact that she's not really Alicia? I don't think that's been made clear yet. Meanwhile, not far away, lurking in a dark alley, has there been an issue of the DeFalco run yet where there hasn't at least been one scene of someone lurking in a dark alley? It's definitely some kind of trend with this guy. So this time, it's the super grotesque She-Thing lurking in that alley. But then Ben shows up, and he says he's been looking for her. He needs to bring her back to headquarters so Reed can help her out. She points out that Reed has never been able to help Ben. Reed Richards can probably MacGyver a time machine out of a pocket calculator, a hairdryer, and an Atari 2600 ET game cartridge, but he can't figure out how to cure a thing from being a thing, using all the best technology he has. She asks why Ben hasn't allowed Reed to fix his messed up face instead of covering it with a metal helmet. Touché, Miss Marvel. Ben doesn't have an answer for that. He puts a hand on her shoulder, but she swats him away, knocking him across the street and through a window. She starts to worry that she might be losing her mind. Ben jumps back out, grabs a lamppost and wraps it around her, but she breaks free. And then she picks up a bus, Superman 2 style, and throws it at Ben, and it slides across the ground and he stops it. Ben starts to tell her that he was confused with Alicia coming back and he was having a hard time trying to choose between them. But it should be a pretty easy choice. For example, Alicia, she has never thrown a bus at Ben Grimm. He tells Sharon that he's scared she'll do something that they will both regret. And then the Human Torch comes flying along and sees Ben and Sharon fighting, so he creates a big flaming force signal in the sky to alert his teammates. And wouldn't you know it, right at that very moment, Reed is looking out the window. These people, when they're not fighting crime, they sure do spend a lot of their free time looking out the window, which is a good thing, otherwise they might have to use a less efficient method of contacting each other, like, for example, the communicators on their belts. So Reed starts getting out of bed, putting his shirt on, but Sue comes in and tells him he's supposed to be recuperating from his injuries. But he says his teammates are counting on him. And surprisingly, she doesn't bitch at him. She doesn't argue. She just looks at him adoringly and thinks about how much she loves him. Back with Ben and Sharon, Sharon heads down into the subway station, and she's feeling suicidal again, just like the first time she became a she-thing, and she wants to hurl herself on the third rail. Ben's like, "No, not the third rail!" And I'm like, "Yes, the third rail!" But Ben jumps on her and tackles her. Sharon cries and says that she has nothing left and her life is over, and she throws Ben aside, and then finally she tosses herself on the third rail. Reed, Sue, and Johnny enter the subway station, and they pass Ben, who doesn't say anything. He just runs out of the station. They find Sharon on the subway tracks, unconscious but still alive, so they need to figure out a way to move her, but they look around and Ben is gone. Soon, back at FF headquarters, Ben arrives, talking to himself, saying that Dr. Doom is going to pay for what he did to Sharon. He gets into the FF rocket, and he prepares to take off. Later, in Latveria, at Castle Doom, they're hard at work on this equipment, getting ready for a visit from a powerful cosmic being. One guy tells Doom that the equipment is functioning flawlessly. Doom's designs are pure genius. But really, how do you test equipment like that? Doom replies that he's got some torture devices that are pretty good, and his assistant may very soon get acquainted with them if he fails to deliver a satisfactory report. Doom checks the report, and he seems satisfied. A robot guard comes in and tells Dr. Doom that the Fantastic Four rocket is on its way to Latveria. Doom says he doesn't have time for that shit now, so he orders one of his men to take care of it. So the castle opens fire at the rocket using laser guns, and that's it for this issue. Next month, according to the next month blurb on the letters page, what happened to Ben? I'm guessing he's going to survive. Will Sharon Ventura live? And if she does, will Reed find a cure for her condition? I'm guessing since they asked that second question, she does live. Or will she live forever as a she-thing? What about the injured Reed and the dysfunctional Sue? Will they be able to fend off the new fearsome four, Doom, and each other? First, I like that they call Bitchy Sue the dysfunctional Sue, and I assume the fearsome four is the forgettable four of Claw and those other three folks, whoever they are, the two aliens and the warrior chick. And just what do Franklin and Huntura have in common? I know. Nobody cares about the adult Franklin or Huntara. All this, and at Dr. Doom's calling, the hunger arrives. Ah yes, another new Tom DeFalco, Paul Ryan villain. They really have been creating a bunch of winners, haven't they? You know, at least they create new characters instead of bringing back the same villains over and over again. I don't think we see Mr. Miracle or Miracle Man. Is it Mr. Miracle? Miracle Man? Miracle Boy? Miracle... whatever. Anyway, you can download other episodes of this podcast at iTunes or find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. I've posted some of my favorite panels from each issue at www.podcastff.blogspot.com. And if you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over.
This is for the G's, and this is for the hustlers. This is for the hustlers, now back to the G's. This is for the G's, and this is for the hustlers. This is for the hustlers, now back to the G's.
Freeze. At ease. Now let me drop some more of them keys. It's 199 Trey, so let me just play. It's Snoop Dogg, I'm on the mic, I'm back with Dr. Dre. But this time, I'm gonna hit your ass with a touch.